This is Air Commander Starscream, and you are listening to Half Measures. Half Measures? Sounds like Megatron's battle strategy.
Kia ora, and welcome to episode 211 of the Half Measures podcast. I'm once again joined by my friend and co-host, Mr. Borkenauer. How are you, Paul?
Kia ora, Dan. I am very well, thank you. I'm hoping you are too. I'm hoping you've had a less eventful week than last, or did someone drive a tank into your kitchen or something this week?
So update on the car situation. Not a lot to report. It's quite slow, you know. We're really just waiting for insurance. There's nothing really further happening from a police side. So, and I don't know, we're just in this state of limbo, but it's kind of, we were just sort of reminiscing about the 1 week anniversary since the incident. But nothing new to report. We cleared the baby horse from any sort of potential involvement in this. So that's good. Can continue as a Patreon producer. Nothing to report. We're still just missing the car. We've still got the big scorched, burnt earth mark outside our house as a regular reminder. But
that's going to be there for a while, right?
Yeah. I feel like someone needs to come and repair the road, but I just feel like it's one of those things that it'll never get repaired, and then eventually we'll start parking on it. We call it the curse spot at the moment, and basically no one parks there. So but I'm sure that will get filled up and forgotten, and the world will get moving.
Incredible. Shout out there to Tony Fole as well, because you're right. He did very, very quickly provide evidence through the means of a timeline. You know how you have that option on Google, like recording where you've been and all the rest of it? So there was a timeline of his whereabouts, which is actually really handy. If you ever do get in trouble, which I know can happen quite frequently in our line of work, Dan, was able to clear himself, and also on the fact that you said it was allegedly youth, and that eliminated him from the inquiries immediately.
I did appreciate Tony's speedy kind of, as soon as the pod dropped, I felt like he was all over it. He's like, look, here's my whereabouts, here's what's going on, I'm clear, move on. And
does
you know
not,
what, we cleared him straight away.
That guy.
We operate a lot faster than the insurance industry, that is for sure.
Originally from Dagenham, those people do not mess about, Dan, because they've always got the cops after them about something, so he's used to that sort of thing, I'd imagine.
Very good, very good. Paul, just like tradition dictates, what have you been watching this week?
Well, Dan, I've got to be honest, I've had one of those weeks where I really just needed some comfort watching, you know, something that ticks boxes for me, and no matter what it's going to be fun, and fun for me can go many ways, could be sci-fi, could be whatever. But another one that's real good for me, Dan, in comfort is old movies, and really old movies. So here we go. For my old movie, this came off the back of Paddy's top 10 Western list that we read out last week. It is 1960s The Magnificent Seven. The classic, the original, the seven gunfighters who were hired by Mexican peasants, this is the description, not my interpretation, to liberate their village from oppressive bandits. So one of the classic Westerns, one of the best casts I believe you will ever find in terms of the sort of the big names, a top cast at the top of their game in peak, each of them at sort of peak age. Yul Brynner, Steve McQueen, Eli Wallach, Charles Bronson, James Coburn. I mean, it just goes on. An absolutely magnificent movie with a absolutely magnificent score. I can still hear the theme right now in my head. It's just, they just don't make it like they used to. It was just what I needed. So good.
I love the tagline on the poster. They were seven. They fought 700. This is great. It's already got the energy, you know. It's good. And so, you know, something that's always sort of great about a classic old Western is they're often a little bit longer, but they really kind of focus on some good storytelling. And often the it can be a bit of a dark story at times, but it's been such a long time since I've seen this movie. I can't sort of, it's probably due a rewatch, to be honest. It's been too long.
Yeah, it's kind of the tier of, like you recently, relatively recently, you know, enjoyed Paul Newman and Robert Redford in Butch Cassidy and Sundance Kid. And it's kind of like, particularly when you've got Yul Brynner and Steve McQueen together, it's just, there's something really wholesome, if that's the right word, about that. It just, you know, I watch these older movies with a different lens to when I'm judging a new movie. You know, you forgive certain things, but it's aged well. Great one-liners, close-ups on faces, just beautifully shot, and just so much good storytelling, honor, dignity. And then you've just got this whole anticipation of these seven, you know, getting the seven together, kind of like Justice League, but with slightly different characteristics and personas. And then going on that mission and all the way through to the final showdown. And the final line made me think of you as well, Dan, with the leads at the end when they sort of part their ways as adios. And it's just, and then the music rises. It's just so good. I mean, Yul Brynner was, for me, was born to play the lead of Chris. He really brings an aura of, like, total authority that's needed for someone who needs to be universally respected by the group he's going to lead in. And then at other moments, he's just like turns to the camera and he's just got like real dry humor and so good. The one that always stands out for me is Eli Wallach, who I was looking at his IMDb profile. He lived to 98 and, you know, he was in movies right up to like the Wall Street Never Sleeps sequel with, what was his name from Transformers and Indy, who came in with Michael Douglas. You know, right up to modern day movies, just so good. Wonderful performance as the bad guy, wisecracks. You just can't help but smiling as he delivers his lines. And then probably the actor that, for me, was what could he have become if he didn't pass away so young. It was Steve McQueen. He died at 50 from cancer, which I believe was caused by he used to do a lot of racing, and he used to, the what they lined the suits with in the days in those cars was asbestos stuff. And of course it just horrible, but just across his work, this is like right up there. He's just one of the most natural performers of all. He never seems to be acting, is the way it comes across. He just seems to be the character, and his gestures, his facial expressions, you could imagine him, someone like him, slipping into a movie, a modern day movie today, with like top draw cast members, and he'd just be so cool on screen. Just so good.
He's got, I loved it.
Had a great time.
Such a fantastic name as well, like Steve McQueen. Like, it's so, it just sort of, like it's a powerful name, you know, like it's a great, like, stage name. It's got,
yeah.
And you know, it's probably largely due to him, but I just think you just say the name Steve McQueen, whether it's a movie, whether it's racing, motorbikes, watches, like it's, he's all over it. So the question is, Paul, and it's going to be difficult because you probably don't have a top 10. So old mate Paddy, this was number 3 on his top 10 Westerns. Is this, like, obviously we don't know where your other Western movies sit, but is this a top 5 for you or top 10?
Probably just outside of top 5 for me. I did actually give it a bit of thought. I haven't actually compiled a list. I think we should. But I know I can easily name my top 5, and so it would sit outside of those, but it would be in the 10. It would be in the 10. So I think we should do our 10s then, because I think these Westerns are just absolutely beautiful. And just going back to the name McQueen, of course, Steve McQueen, that's, you know, the Lightning McQueen. That was
right.
Where that came from, right?
It is. Well, we are going to do that special episode at some point where we'll do a deep dive into Westerns, which I'm sure might sort of alienate some of our audience, but I'm sure we'll have a great time doing it regardless.
I think we do. It's weird, actually, because I think we do alienate the audience with some things, and then with other people with other things. And yet, so there's like, some people love this, some people love that, some people love the standalone ones we do. And you know what? Something for everyone is what I say. I think just to rationalize my criticism as to why it wouldn't quite be in the top 5 for me, they took maybe a little, maybe too long to get the 7 together. Like, there's so much work goes into actually getting the 7 that by the time you've got to 7, you're over halfway through the movie to go on this mission. So I would have, yeah, who am I to judge? But that would be my one criticism of this film.
And were, like, was it sort of a good high quality version that you watched? Where did you find this bad boy?
No, definitely high quality. This is available on Prime Video.
Very good, very good. This is does it inspire you to want to watch the modern remake of The Magnificent Seven, which I've never seen personally?
It kind of does.
Mm.
It more inspires me, not to worry listeners, because I won't do it if I do it for a while, but what it really got me thinking about was movies like The Great Escape.
Oh, yeah, great movie. Great movie.
You know, again, Steve McQueen, again, James Coburn, you know, you got a whole, you know, and then throw in Attenborough and others. It's just, it sort of gets me going in that vein of thought. But that generally is the sort of like the long winter afternoon. So maybe come June or July, you never know, there could be a couple of those cropping up.
It's funny that you just said The Great Escape, because it's just like sparked a core memory in my mind of the Dirty Dozen movie. And mm-hmm. I just remember, even though that's not Steve McQueen, it just made me think of those old World War II movies and just the many times I watched that over my childhood.
Charles Bronson was in that one as well. Charles Bronson was in both those. And so, yeah, he's alongside right. Lee Marvin in Dirty Dozen. And so... Donald Sutherland, Telly Savalas. I mean, just these are some classic old school actors.
Very good. What was your other movie?
So for my really old movie, I won't talk long about this, because yeah, I would actually say, give or take, Michael Chalmers, Paddy Fox, Trisha Brady, and possibly Mike Lewis. I don't know of any of our regulars who have the slightest interest in watching 1936's Spaceship to the Unknown. I will be brief on this because it's 88 years old then. Flash Gordon, Dale Ardern, and Dr. Zarkov visit the planet Mongo to thwart the evil schemes of Emperor Ming, the Merciless, who set his planet on a collision course with Earth. Now, if you look this up on Prime Video, which is where I watched it, you'll see the movie was technically released in 1966, but that's essentially because in 66 they decided to take the Flash Gordon TV serials from 1936 and edit them into a movie-length version with a running time of just over an hour and a half, which is perfect, because with respect, I didn't need to watch the four-hour, five-minute TV serials. The hour and a half was just a lot of fun as it was. And, you know, I'm comfortable talking spoilers here with it being nearly 100 years old, but they just don't write synopsis like that anymore. And what's funny is it seems like it would be even harder to tell that story that I just described back then than if you were to try and do it now in terms of technology and effects and budget and cameras and all of these things. But the ambition that they had in the 30s to make this thing is incredible. And it's, again, just... a real comfort watch for me. I've watched a lot of sort of Flash Gordon type movies and some of the TV serials, and there's something really, again, the word that's coming to mind today is wholesome. There's something really, really, really just, I just have a real appreciation for what they were attempting to do at the time. And let us not forget that so much of this inspired George Lucas. If you actually watch some of the scenes, I should have sent you some screenshots of some of the things, and it's just like you can pick out specifically where Lucas has gone, I want to make a movie that does that. And it's almost like frame for frame, the same type of shot. It's incredible.
It's interesting, right? Because I think Flash Gordon is actually referenced a lot in pop culture. It's the same with Taika Waititi in Thor Ragnarok. Sort of has it, you know, there's all sorts of influences from there. Wow. What inspired this watch? Was it just sort of a lucky dip? Was it a... been on the watch list for a while?
It kind of was, because, yeah, as I say, I sort of felt the need just for some comfort watches. I could feel that within myself, and I had a couple of train journeys into my day job, and I was like, I need something just to get me through these train journeys, and saying it's going to really, like an old leather jacket. And so once I'd done Magnificent Seven and I started looking around Prime Video, let us not forget, if we go all the way back to... what was the film I watched? I think it was The Time Beyond the Time Barrier, where you described it as the lolly jar of Prime Video. They've got a lot of old stuff in there. Like if you type into the search engines 1960s movies, it's incredible what Prime Video have. And so I just went back and back and back and I was like, oh yeah, let's do this. And it's just a lot of fun. And there's some funny things that just happen in the story that just like, so there's chaos worldwide as the news hits that this planet's going to collide with the world. And so we see these scenes in London and Paris and New York. But a scientist thinks that by traveling to the new planet in his rocket, there's a way to stop it. And then in unrelated news, there's a plane crash. And these two sort of strangers meet. They parachute down to safety and they meet this doctor. And naturally, the first thing that they say is, oh yeah, we'll go on the rocket with you. So you've just survived a plane crash. You meet a crazy scientist who said he's off to save the world. And they're like, yeah, we'll do that. It's there's a real childlike nature to this sort of story that's just really refreshing. I just love it.
It's a simpler time in storytelling. So, oh, that's great. I'm glad you had a good time. It's not something that's overly been on my radar, but
no, it's there's something about the old black and white early sort of piece of cinema that I just feel like for me, it's fun. It's an hour and a half where I can appreciate the ambition and the spirit and I don't have to think too much about it. And, you know, they made this, you know, this is before World War II. It's just unreal just to think. I think this is one of the oldest ones I've watched alongside the Hitchcock movie, The Lady Vanishes, I think was maybe the next oldest movie. But yeah, I won't talk any longer because it's old. No one else is going to watch it. Prime Video, if you're keen, though, I recommend.
I reckon there's someone at Prime Video and all of a sudden, like, they see someone watches this and something, like, lights up on their board. Like, oh, we got one. We got someone watching
it. I told you. I told you someone would watch this.
It gets renewed for another 12 months. Oh, there'll be some more.
Someone else will watch. It's, look, if you Google George Lucas and Flash Gordon, he referenced this film specifically. And so I feel of a kindred spirit. That's my sort of feel good factor there, but that's enough, Dan. What have you been watching?
All right, let me bring us into the modern age. So I've got a couple of movies as well before our watch of the week. So the first one, this is a movie I watched on iTunes. iTunes, God, what am I, like 400 years old myself? On
on your Apple BlackBerry? Movies.
Yeah, on my BlackBerry. So this is a movie called Sisu, which is spelled S-I-S-U, and it's basically a let me give you the translation of this word. So it's a Finnish term that can be roughly translated into English as strength of will, determination, perseverance, and acting rationally in the face of adversity. Sisu is not a momentary courage, but the ability to sustain that courage. It's a word that cannot be fully translated. So this has kind of been a movie that's been a little bit on my radar as one of those movies that, like it's not like Hollywood blockbuster, but I heard it was sort of a good action story, a good war story. And I'll tell you, Paul, it did not disappoint. It is a classic action movie. Almost like there's something kind of, like they don't make movies like this anymore. But they do at the same time. Like,
hang on, this is 2022.
Yeah, that's right. No, I mean it in the sense of like the story in itself is a story that's been told like 100 times. So, but in terms of the way they kind of like it's kind of got that action and kind of like violence to it that is a little bit niche, where when they get this, like the story's okay, but they kind of like bring it together as a total package and it just kind of works in a special way. So basically the premise here is you've got an ex-soldier who you kind of learn gradually through the movie of his sort of level of skill, but he's doing a bit of gold mining in the sort of the last days of World War II, and he strikes it rich, and as he's kind of trying to make his way back to the main town with his gold, you've got the SS retreating back to Germany, but the SS are basically destroying everything in their path, so that it's basically hard for the Allies to access any of the towns, bridges, people, whatever it may be. And so what happens is this platoon, squad, group of SS soldiers who are sort of rolling back to Berlin in a couple of tanks, kind of come across this guy. They end up trying to take his gold, and that's when he basically goes full John Wick on the German army. And so you kind of get to learn about this guy that, you know, he's actually like an ex-commando, like he's got all the skills, like he's kind of old, he's fully kind of like battle-hardened and ready, and it's kind of like an interesting enough story. So the story is, as I say, it's not a story we haven't seen before, but it's kind of like like it's the good action and the sort of the depth to the action and the effects that kind of bring it together as a bit of a fun package. Our main character, Jorma Tomila, he's awesome. I think, you know, for an older guy, like he kind of betrays someone who's, I'm not sure what his age is in real life, but yeah, you kind of get he's probably like 50s, like probably late 50s, but he is full John Wick. And there's enough of an interesting story here just to kind of keep the whole thing moving. Like the total thing kind of wraps up as a, you know, it's only in an hour and a half, so it's a relatively easy watch. I think when it comes out on streaming, it's probably not far away from it. If you're into your sort of, you know, you like a bit of John Wick, you like a bit of Nobody, you like a bit of that type of thing combined with a bit of World War II, this could be something interesting to check out.
My first question is, you mentioned this has been on your radar for a while. Like, I sort of look at this movie and I think, I've never seen this poster, I've never heard of this. I'm looking at the cast, I've never heard of any of them. I haven't heard of the writer, the director. How's this on your radar? What circles are you in, Dan, that I'm not in?
So when I go in to search for movies, I don't sort by oldest, I sort by newest. And then
I walked into that, didn't I?
No, I think I saw the trailer at some point on YouTube, like a few years ago, and I've seen this pop up as a tile on Apple Movies and stuff a few times, so, and I had a bit of spare time, I knew that this wasn't a movie for me and the wife. This was a solo experience, and it, you know, she sort of came out at the end and she was a bit like, oh, not so much for her. So I guess if the action and kind of violent side of it isn't for you, then, you know, that could be to stay away. But if you do enjoy that type of movie every now and again as a bit of a popcorn thriller, then this is quite good.
And I see it's something that I haven't watched a lot of. It's a Finnish movie, so it's made in Finland, filmed in Finland, Finnish language, and if anything else, I'm actually curious around the landscape of Finland as well and all the rest of it. How did that all feel?
Yeah, it was beautiful but grim, if you know what I mean, because it, like, this is literally the, you know, the last days, the, you know, the final days of the war. Like, everything's very bleak and grey, and it's sort of like, you know, like, it's quite beautifully made. Like, it's, you can even see from the poster on IMDb, like, it's got like a real gritty kind of nature to it. So it's a bit of a visceral experience. Yeah, I'm with you. Haven't seen, don't know a lot about Finland. Don't know a lot about their sort of like role. It sort of led me to sort of in World War II. So it was interesting to kind of like dig a little bit more into that.
There's a, I mean, I'm just looking through some of the images of it, and there's a picture there.
Yes.
I mean, it looks like really graphic, but in a very sort of meant to shock you sort of way, but not for sure, just not for the sense of giving the person that, but actually it looks really intense in terms of story.
I think that's it. Like, and I sometimes feel like when I say it's sort of like, you know, action and violent, and it, like, it's kind of good, like it sounds a little bit lowbrow, but it's like, there is some over-the-top action scenes, but it's not done in a slapstick way. It's done in a kind of a jaw-drop type way, and it kind of contextually makes sense in the story. Now, in the sense of that, though, it kind of does get a little bit superhero-ish at times. Our main character is a little bit unkillable, but I think you need him to be unkillable, because he's kind of the force of good in this very bleak time in the world.
The guy, the lead guy now has got a vibe just hearing you say that and looking at the poster, kind of like a, almost like an Ed Harris meets maybe like a Jeff Bridges meets Conor McGregor meets, I don't know how many other people I can sort of throw in there.
Meet John Wick. It reminds me of, what's the movie we watched with the Hannibal Lecter guy, who's also in Rogue One.
Mads Mikkelsen.
Yeah, and he was in that movie we watched where, yeah, that movie. This is really
great. We don't know what we're doing. Something. I know exactly the movie you're talking about.
I'm going to look it up right now. All hired. We're talking. Yep. Yeah, that
no,
was.
No, he does have that look.
That movie was, Riders of Justice.
I know that much.
Yeah, Riders of Justice. And it kind of, I think it was that movie that kind of, like there's some really great Finnish, Norwegian, Swedish type movies said that, you know, that this is kind of an untapped, for me anyway, a realm of movies. And so that kind of sparked a bit of joy in that regard. But yeah, that is available on
iTunes.
Down at your local Blockbuster, your Video Easy. But it, I would imagine probably not too far off streaming. It has been out for a little while now. It was a 2022 movie. But actually, it looks like it's, looking at IMDb right now, it looks like it might be on Prime Video. So you'll be away laughing. All right, I've got one more movie for you, Paul. This is a 2024 movie, so I'm getting as fresh as they come. This is a movie that my lovely wife has been saying, can we watch this movie? And I've been like really resisting it for a long time. Now, one of us is right, one of us is wrong. This is The Beekeeper. So this is,
I know where I'm placing my bets on who's right and who's wrong.
So look, I don't know if I want to get into that on the podcast. It'll be permanently in the archives. So this is a Jason Statham movie. Where it's basically, I feel like I'm coming in with the real angry movies this week. So one man's brutal campaign
beards,
for vengeance.
Beards and anger.
So one man's brutal campaign for vengeance takes on national stakes after he's revealed to be a former operative of a powerful and clandestine organization known as Beekeepers. I did not like this, Paul. I'm just going to come straight out the gate. I knew I wasn't going to like it, and I didn't like it. And You know how I get a bit twitchy about Liam Neeson movies, and every single Liam Neeson movie is basically the same thing with him in a brown leather jacket, basically.
Yeah, you're wrong about that too.
Yeah, replaying the events from Taken. This is not that dissimilar, but it's this. The thing that really just kills me about this movie, almost in a like a laugh out loud, both die of embarrassment type way, is there is so many bee puns in this movie. It's just horrible. Like, and they're just constantly talking about like the hive and who, like, you know, once the bee leaves the hive, what it's going to do, and the other one bee will protect the other bees, and then the queen bee, and it's like, what does a bee do with honey? And it's just, it's so horrible. But that aside, there, your basic premise here is the beekeeper is literally a beekeeper. So it's, I don't know who comes up with this stuff. They must have had some writers from The Walking Dead kind of getting behind it, but he's doing some beekeeping work. Somebody that where he's doing the beekeeping work, the lady who, like, let's say, owns the farm, gets caught up in a scam. The beekeeper does not like this, Paul. So he basically goes on a one-man mission to unravel this the scam, find the powers that be. They try to stop the beekeeper. They send other beekeepers after the main beekeeper. No one wants to go up against this Jason Statham beekeeper because he's a very good beekeeper. And like, Jason Statham is actually awesome in this movie, like regardless of all other things, like he is a top tier, you know, martial artist. He has some fantastic fight scenes. He's got some fantastic one-liners. It's kind of just the wider premise of the movie, and I really wanted to like it because once I saw David Ayer was the director, I was like, all right, this could be all right. And it wasn't by any means like, you know, it wasn't Bill and Ted, but it didn't quite, like, you know, when I talked about Sisu, like, it's that was kind of also a movie that kind of sits in around the sixes on IMDb, but this movie also sits in the sixes, but it's a bit painful, like, and I would hate to have to sit down and watch it again, whereas the other movie I would probably sit down and give it another go. And it feels like, this very much feels like they're trying to make The Beekeeper into a bit of a John Wick. And it's like, we've already got
even
John
Wick. Even the poster's got that vibe.
Yeah, yeah, and it's like, I don't know, it's a shame because I think Jason Statham, as I say, is fantastic. There's some other great actors in here as well. Like, we've got Jeremy Irons, who's always awesome. We've got Josh Hutcherson, awesome. We've also got Emmy Raver Lampman, who you may know from The Umbrella Academy. So, like, it's a weird one because you can tell they've had the production budget. You can tell it's got the good effects. You can tell it's got, you know, a pretty good cast, but it was just a bit lame, I think, for me. So where it could have been a fun movie, I just, you know, where there's honey, Paul, there's not always sweetness.
You see, yeah, these are the taglines I'm trying to think of in my mind, because I've got no idea what Statham's accent is in this movie, but in my mind, he's coming in Guy Ritchie, Lock, Stock and Two Smokers. Like, the whole time he's like, Dan, sooner or later, you're going to get stung. Or like
It's basically that. It's classic Statham.
I'm here to protect the Queen. You're an enemy. You know, I don't know.
Yeah, it's exactly that. So it's probably toned down a little bit, but it's very Statham. Like, you could use the Statham in anywhere from the Fast and the Furious movies to any of the other numerous, The Mechanic.
There's two Stathams. Movies. There's two Stathams for me. There's the British Statham, and then there's that American, that one that he does. And it's never quite a true American. It's always a really distinctive, like, you know, there's Californian, there's New York, and there's Texan, and there's Statham. It's like its own accent of American. And but David Ayer, as you say, you know, some films he's been associated with haven't always worked out to be good, but from a directing point of view, you know, or even just producing a Training Day, we both love Fury. There's been so many movies that he's done that have always delivered in that respect. There was always a chance this movie might have been good. So this feels like a Dan Wedding King movie that I would expect you to bring to the pod. So it's kind of, I kind of give the patron producer a sort of a pass on that, thinking, well, this feels like it would be up your alley. But yeah, the number of times you said bees during your description of or hive, it's maybe they've taken it a little bit too far.
I almost, on reflection, if they actually just took out all the slapstick puns and bee jokes, it might have actually been okay. It was almost that kind of just like was just like bringing me down. The further this movie went on, I'm just like, just enough. Like, it, because it kind of made it feel like are you trying to be a comedy? Are you trying to be an action movie? Like, what do you want to be? And I know that you can, you know, those are two genres that actually sort of normally pair pretty well together, but the cringe factor didn't do it for me. But you can even see in the poster, he's even wearing like a full beekeeper's uniform. Like, it's like they've really leaned into this. Like, somebody's like, you know what? We're going to do something about beekeepers and we're going to make it awesome. And this is it.
It's like if they'd brought Jerry Seinfeld in, you know, from B movie and sort of used a few of those puns too, that might have helped there. Just as an aside, Dan, just only because you mentioned him and I didn't, when I was going through what am I going to watch this week and I was looking for things that were, you know, my comfort things, my other comfort thing is, as you just called out, a Liam Neeson in a dark jacket and holding a gun. And there was, as I was going through Prime Video, there's one at the moment called In the Land of Saints and Sinners where he is on the front cover with the jacket and the gun. And I was like, this could be it. And in my mind, I thought, I should save that. Dan might want to watch that.
You know what? You can bank this, Paul. Whenever you think to yourself, Dan will want to watch this, just go ahead and you've got my blessing right now to just start watching.
Go ahead and watch it.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Yep. Unless it's Liam Neeson as Qui-Gon Jinn, you know, it's or original Taken.
Or Ra's al Ghul.
Yeah, I'll also accept that. That's an original Taken, I'll also accept. But it's a shame because I actually do like him as an actor. It's just I need some new stories.
Well, I'll be coming in with a review of The Land of the Sinners and Saints in the next few weeks, no doubt.
I love that. I love that. So that is another movie that you can watch on your iTunes, as the old kids say. I imagine that's probably also not too far away from streaming. Paul, it must be time for our watch of the week.
It is indeed. So every week, Dan and I bring to the podcast our watch of the week. We announce what that will be at least a week in advance over in our Discord community. You can join us there by clicking on the link in the show notes to find out what we're watching week by week. And we do keep a running 3 weeks ahead for when we're watching TV shows to give you time to watch all those episodes. This time, though, Dan, didn't take too long. Just took 2 hours, 38 minutes this week. If you wanted to watch along with us, it was the movie Napoleon.
Do you know, Paul, before we get into it was actually kind of nice to have a movie just for old time's sake, you know, rather than having to like get through a TV show.
Take the pressure off.
Take the gas off, you know. But yeah, Napoleon. So this is one that I don't know about you, but I've been very much looking forward to. I was contemplating going to the cinema to go see it when it first came out, but I sort of heard the mixed reviews. Obviously, big Joaquin Phoenix fan. Big Ridley Scott fan. As soon as it came out, I was very, very excited to get this on the schedule. It was interesting, though, because I felt like I'd heard a lot of people's reckons about this film before I even saw it. And a lot of people were like, oh, yeah, it's okay, or oh, it's a bit boring, or it's a bit long, or whatever. Straight out of the gate, Paul, I really enjoyed it. I thought it was good. There is some flaws in this movie, which I would like to sort of like pad out, but overall I actually had a really great time. I definitely acknowledge this is not a movie for everyone, but I think for what it gave us in an Apple context, it's pretty awesome.
This is the classic for me, classic cliche of a movie of two halves for me. Or at least a movie or two have seen through the eyes of someone who may simply have been too tired or just not in the right frame of mind to take on a movie of this magnitude. Because the first half of this movie, I was completely hooked. Genuinely, really, really, I was so into it. And I thought the story and the build-up and the characterizations and the way they were moving through things was really, really well done, really exciting. I was really interested. I've said it before and it's terrible, but I'll say it again. I was learning. Because I'm presuming that Ridley Scott is providing me with the truth, of course. But then this sounds awful in the context of the fact it's a movie rather than the real life events. I kind of became fatigued or overwhelmed or just numb to the number of battles they were going into. It was like, you're going into a battle, hurrah, we won, and then going to, and it was almost too much. It was 2 hours 38 as well, but as I say, first hour, and also wider than that, direction and cast and production, all of those things great, but just, and it's like, it's really a weird thing to be criticizing a story because it's depicting what has happened, so that's an awkward sort of, you know, writers, could you do something else? Well, no, actually we can't because this is what happened, so my criticism is kind of muted, but that's how I felt.
I think there's some real similarities for me with this and The Killers of Flower Moon, in the sense that I felt like there's kind of a deeper story here that I kind of felt got a bit glossed over in parts. And I think it's even misleading from the poster that's even on IMDb. It says he came from nothing, he conquered everything. And I think I didn't really feel like I came out of this knowing the real Napoleon. I almost said Napoleon Dynamite because I just think.
Now that would be a movie.
That would be a great movie.
He came from nothing. He conquered everything. Napoleon Dynamite.
And so I think like it kind of gave us that journey at the start, which I think you're right. The first half is definitely the strongest bit. But as someone who doesn't, like, I don't really have a base knowledge of the French Revolution. I was probably away that day at school. And so I kind of found myself having to do a quick sort of like Wikipedia search. Okay, so wait, what's happening? And needing to know a little bit of wider context. And then kind of equally by the end, I kind of felt like it just sort of jumped to these sort of big crucial moments, but without sort of taking you on a journey to really kind of like feel for the character. And obviously, you know, Napoleon's kind of played out here as a more a hero, I would say, than a villain. But it didn't show, I think, the tension of who the character was and what kind of, you know, where he came from and how he got to who he was and the complications of who his love life was with his amazing sort of strategic mind. And I think some of that came through in the battles. And like, I kind of enjoyed the battles, but I think I'm a little bit like, maybe that I'm like wired that way. But I think story wise, I kind of wanted more. And I'm going to say it, Paul, because it's a classic half measures statement.
It comes.
Should have been a TV show.
And I think you're right on that count, like a three parter or something, because there's something about the ability to have watched one episode and then, okay, I'll watch another episode tomorrow that might have helped me rather than sitting there for what felt like 3 hours. It was 2 hours, you know, nearly 2 hours 40. It really, I could feel the length of it. I would not want to have watched this in the movies theaters.
Yeah. And so I actually think it probably should have been like maybe like a 7 to 8 episode. Yeah, like even if it's like an hour per episode. And I think it should have actually sort of gone like give me Super Young, give me sort of like growing up, like almost take me through the years and take me through the, okay, so this is why he's in this is why he's in love with Josephine. This is why there's this tension. This is why he's now getting exiled. Why are we exiling someone who's such a great leader? Why all of a sudden is he the king? Like, it's think I found myself interested in the story and I wasn't getting the bits that I kind of wanted. And so if anything, it kind of left me with more questions. And I know that's probably long, but I think a limited series would have just given them a bit more time to kind of pad out those gaps.
Okay. Sustained. I take your point, because what you're describing is going back further in time. And I think that would have warranted the extra episodes, because what we did get a lot out of this was his obsession with power and the relationship with Josephine, and actually what I was possibly more interested in, which is a bit weird given the title was Napoleon, was actually the stuff around it, the history of how the French had fallen, how the last queen of France, the royalists, so you know, they're fighting battles on so many fronts, including within. And you know, I started speculating in my mind, thinking, you know, what if the British had revolted in, or maybe I should say the English, what if the English had revolted against the royals in a way that they did here and were successful and had overturned, you know, what would history look like now had that happened? It's just fascinating.
Yeah, and I just feel like they had, like, I thought the casting was great. I thought the direction was incredible. Some incredible like set pieces, and the battle scenes were truly epic. And I just think, just imagine it sort of paired with almost like, you know, like it would have to be a limited series, but almost like a Game of Thrones level. Like, let's have a couple of key battles through this, but let's take us on a journey to get to why these battles are so important. Let's get to the point of why Josephine is so important. Let's get to the point of actually how he became king and what the sort of turmoil and resistance was sort of creating in the nation. And there's a lot to talk about here. I imagine, does Joaquin Phoenix want to do a TV show? Probably not.
That's probably what it is. I was just thinking in my mind, that's probably, in the same way, but to a lesser scale, why the Michelle Yeoh Star Trek TV series all of a sudden became a movie. You know, she sort of has really skyrocketed, and probably is like now, like, oh, you know, I haven't got, you know, we all know he's doing Joker 2 and many other things. Actually, talking of Joker, there was one moment, I don't know if you picked it up, I was going to Snapchat it to you, where there was one moment where he laughs at one point and he almost creeps into the Joker laugh. It was really funny to see, because, of course, he looks so different because, of course, he's got that weight gain compared to Joker. I thought, as you say, he was fantastic. I thought Vanessa Kirby as Josephine was good. She's really now appearing in a lot of top quality. Like, we've seen her just in the last Mission Impossible movies. The Crown, obviously, as Margaret. We've seen her. Fast and the Furious is another thing that she's been in. She's appearing in a lot of big big motion pictures and big TV series, and I thought she was good in this. And the other one I was going to call out, because I love seeing him in anything, is Matt Bonner. And he was, you know, he had a lot of really intense scenes with Joaquin Phoenix. And of course, he, for me, will always be Duncan from Shetland, the brother of Jimmy Perez. And he's a terrific actor. So yeah, some really great cast in here.
Yeah, so look, overall, I think I'm definitely in the fan of, I overall enjoyed this movie. And I, even though it's probably not for a little while, I would be down for a rewatch of it at some point, just because I think it's one of those movies where I wonder whether on kind of second go, I might kind of take in the story a little bit more, you know, combined with a little bit of light research on the French Revolution.
Yeah, some light research. I think the other thing that's good, and we haven't really talked about it, and we really should, is, you know, Ridley Scott directing, you know, that always guarantees you a, you know, right from the start, a level of quality. It's like before the movie starts, it's like before you open a box of Kellogg's cornflakes, you already know that there's a standard that you're going to get when you open it. He brings that, and he certainly did in terms of direction. My biggest problem actually is that Ridley Scott cannot be making the third and final Alien prequel if he's off, you know, making movies like this. And it's been 12 years since Prometheus, and that trilogy, that needs to be a P1, Dan. So he needs to get down to it.
That makes sense. I was thinking that I'd almost love to do like a fresh peak performance on Ridley Scott. Like it was episode 37 when we did his peak performance, which was a long time ago in Half Measures time. But I guess we're not at the point of re-dipping our hand into the pool. But
and with that, without being morbid, Dan, you know, Ridley Scott, you know, he's now 86. He's got to get on with Alien. He's got to get on with it.
Indeed. So, Canon's Akimbo, Paul, where are you at with this one?
I'm going to go a gun and a half. I was going to go two, but...
Wow, a gun.
Yeah, I know.
Also, it's a cannonball and a half in this particular...
Sorry.
Also, how brutal is a cannon? Like, so brutal. Oh,
now, see, there were some great scenes with the cannonball and that. And I love the ingenuity of that. Sorry to take us off track, but, like, stealing the guns, the cannons, to use against them, like, genius. But no, very brutal.
I'm going to go with 3.5 guns. That's how much I enjoyed
it. Wow, that's a full two cannonballs more than I've offered.
I had high expectations. They were dashed by a number of people, and then I kind of lowered the bar, and then I almost was like, oh, I don't know if I can be bothered watching this movie, and then I had a great time. So yeah, classic Half Measures experience. So that is Napoleon. You can find that on Apple TV or iTunes, depending on how you roll. Next week, Paul, we are doing season 3 of The Morning Show.
Yeah, I'm really excited to jump back into that season. And I really hope it's a step up from season 2. I guess we will see. That is season 3 of The Morning Show, available on Apple TV Plus. Dan, can I ask, however, what your watch of the week is? Oh, sorry, your pick of the week. My apologies.
My pick of the week. I'm going with. I'm going to go Napoleon, I think. It was close between that and Sisu, but I think Napoleon won out as an overall package for me. And I think I'm just a big Joaquin Phoenix fan. How about yourself?
I'm really thinking now. Was I really just too tired, and that second hour just killed me, and maybe I'd need to rewatch it? For me, I'm going to go with Magnificent Seven. There's a reason everyone has heard of the name of this film. And even if many of them haven't seen it, it's like, it's a classic. It's aged well. And it's, for me, it was just what I needed. It's just like when you're sick and you have, you know, you have your chicken soup and your Lucozade. There's something about an old classic for me that really helps this grumpy old public servant go off to work for the coalition government and lift my spirits on the train ride. So yeah, I'll go with Magnificent Seven.
Very good. Shall I take us over to the news desk? So couple of things happening this week. So we've just had, by the time you're listening to this podcast, you may have seen a trailer for Folie à Deux, which is the Joker movie. So I don't know, Paul, it's a teaser trailer to be fair. Have you watched this trailer, Paul, or are you going to watch this trailer?
I am going to watch this trailer. I haven't watched it yet. I saw it advertised and I was sort of nervous thinking, is this going to be showing me how much of a musical this movie is, or is it going to be more mysterious? Have you watched it?
I have watched the trailer. I'm going to keep
I'm going to keep it light
because I realize there'll be people who don't want to watch the trailer. I think this movie is going to be divisive because I think people are going to want original Joker, and I think it's going to be a little bit different, but I think it has the potential to be a 10 out of 10. Like, if they get it right, it's going to be good. It's so
this
good.
This is from the same podcast that brought you The Walking Dead. 10 out of 10. You've got me hyped now.
It's like, I'm excited. And like, I just, Joaquin Phoenix's Joker is, honestly, it's so top tier. It was so good. In fact, as soon as I watched the trailer and it said, you know, basically coming out in October, I was like, virtually counting down the days. I'm like, I can't wait. I'm definitely going to the theatre to see this. 4th of October. But yeah, I think it's going to split fans. I think this musical component, it will depend how it goes. But I don't know, the mood, the lighting, the classic cast, I'm interested. What else have we got here? This isn't classic TV movie news, but there's a new Star Wars game coming out this year called Star Wars Outlaws, and it is going to feature Lady Kira from Solo. So that's a name you might not have heard in a long time, but that may continue a little bit of the Solo story. So if you're a Star Wars fan, definitely keep your eye out for that. I believe that game is coming out in about August, so not too long to wait. The Jon Snow-focused Game of Thrones spin-off has apparently been shelved, stating that they couldn't find the right story to tell. So a little bit of a shame, but also maybe it's the right thing to do. There's already a few Game of Thrones, like we've got House of the Dragon, we've got the Hedge Knight, we've got a few other things kind of bubbling away, and they're kind of new stories as opposed to kind of bringing back characters from the original Game of Thrones. So looks like that's not going ahead at this stage, but if anything evolves, we'll report back on that here. We've also got the Fallout TV show, which is starting very soon in April, and it's actually been brought forward a day, so it's now going to be on the 10th of April that we'll be streaming. So I don't know if this is one on your list, Paul, but I'm definitely going to be checking it out. Big fan of the games. The TV show looks interesting.
Never played the game. Definitely hyped by the sort of the look and feel of it. And also, this week in Wellington, so I work in Wellington CBD, and across the main road as you come away from the railway station, right across the road, they've painted the whole road. There's been a few roads painted in New Zealand of late, but let's not talk about all of them. This one had Fallout across the whole road, end to end. It was the most incredible street painting on a road I've seen in New Zealand ever, I would say, and it was all Fallout. And I was like, you know, if nothing else, this has got everyone's attention. Brilliant.
I think Prime Video does some pretty awesome stuff with their marketing. I feel like it's the same with Roadhouse. I feel like they really invested heavily. I saw a lot of advertising around town for that. And then I've got two other things for you. So Disney has dropped a little bit of release news. So they've started to sort of date some of their upcoming movies. So The Mandalorian and Grogu is set for May 22, 2026. So a couple of years away for that movie.
I can't deal with that. That's more than 2 years away right now. I can't deal with that. That's too far. You're talking about October. You can't wait for October. May 2026, that's more than 2 years away.
It's 2 years next month. So they've also
okay, great.
They've also got, yeah, there's a lot that can happen in the Star Wars universe in that time. Also, yeah. Toy Story 5 will also come out a month later, so that's going to be in June 26. And then they've got a new Moana movie as well, which is going to be coming out in June 2025. So, I think the most interesting one for us in there is The Mandalorian and Grogu, just sort of interesting how far away that is. But I guess that sort of creates some space for the wider Star Wars universe to play out. And then the final bit of news, Paul, and I know you want to have a rage about this, but I saw, this isn't really news, but it was news to me. I went onto Netflix this week and I saw on there that they've got WrestleMania, like ready to stream. I don't know what this WrestleMania was called. WrestleMania XL. I think it's. I'm gonna get destroyed.
Extra large. Brilliant.
For whatever WrestleMania they've just had, they've got it live and ready to go on Netflix. I was so tempted to hit play, Paul. Like I was so tempted, and I was like, but then there's actually like two like episodes of it, like, and they're both like 3 or 4 hours each. And
8 hours.
Like, I was like, I don't have the time. I don't have the bandwidth. But I was interested and I really wanted to. And I don't really know who all the wrestlers and stuff are now, but as they start to bring in more wrestling content, it's just going to be a matter of time before I slip into those comfy old track pants, Paul. And
that's it.
Yeah, I'll be back.
Once you start down that path, not a criticism of America, because I would never do that, right? But they're obsessed, if I may, with things that just go on for so long. Like, I mean, I used to go to ice hockey NHL games when I was over there, and, you know, like what appears to be, like 3 30-minute, it goes on, or 3 20-minute period, it goes on for like 3 hours. The Super Bowl goes on for like 4 hours. Someone like WrestleMania, like what happens? Does someone go along and you're there for like 8 hours of constant? Like, how can you hold that much energy? It's incredible.
I wouldn't, like, I'm making this up. Surely it's over two nights. Like, surely it's like a Saturday, okay. Sunday, and it's okay. Kind of like, I would presume. It always also makes me think, it's like you and I are both in the game of sometimes having to organize, like, you know, like workshops and stuff for people to do. And sometimes you're like, oh, how am I going to kind of like fill up this time? And I think about this when they're like, in America particularly, we're going to have a whole TV show that all it does is play wrestling. And I'm just like, how do you have so much content like to just play like one thing? But it's America. I do what they want.
This is how we're now going to make our workshop plans and agendas and approaches. It's going to be taking a WrestleMania US approach to how we're going to do things, as opposed to the traditional icebreaker. And when are we going to start for morning tea?
Maybe all workshops should just be Royal Rumbles. And so basically you start with...
You get a lot more decided.
You start with two people. When that person gets thrown out of the ring, like they're out. But basically every, like, I don't know, 2 minutes, a new workshop participant enters. And then, like, if they survive, and then whoever's in the ring at the end, they make the final decision. Like, this is how we're doing it. This is how we're doing the service. This is the decision.
This is great. And we can have, like, an underground decision matrix going on, which is, like, during the lunch break, everyone goes into the basement and it becomes, like, Fight Club. And it's brilliant. You get a lot more decisions.
We're cooking now, Paul.
And a lot of anger out as well, I imagine.
Indeed, indeed. But that is the news from me. Anything on your side?
Well, the bit I was making faces at before, you said, oh, I know you want to rage about it, is I don't know how I feel about Toy Story 5. Like, I feel like Toy Story 3 had one of the most emotional endings of all time. And you've talked before, Dan, about Paddington 2. And for me, that was the perfection was reached in Toy Story 3. And what's his name? Andy, the boy? We can't. He has to have been grown up now and the toys have moved on, but I need to know when the toys are going in the cupboard and not coming back out. I need to know when it's finished. It's one of those franchises that I can't keep having. I can't be having Toy Story 9 when I'm in my 70s.
I don't know. I think this is the problem, right? When they're onto a good thing, it just goes forever.
It does. It does. Talking of going forever, Star Wars Tales of the Empire, 6 original animated short stories coming our way. We had Tales of the Jedi a couple of years ago, and you and I watched that, and it was a really interesting sort of watch because it's just real brief things. Tales of the Empire, that's coming our way on May the 4th. See what they did there. And I think that was all the news. I think there was. So what's the other thing I saw? Oh, no, you already mentioned about Fallout. Oh, that's right. Zack Snyder wants to fix Sucker Punch. He's talked about how it's not the director's cut isn't quite the right cut. And it's like, You and I are big fans of a lot of his work, and I know his work is divisive as well, and we enjoyed the Justice League cut, but it's like, sometimes you just got to say, okay, look, I've submitted what I did. Like, if I could go back and recut some of the reports or slide decks or workshop agendas and recut them, they might look different too, but I don't get that opportunity.
I feel like Zack Snyder he needs to be on notice. Like, I feel like he does have some great things, like, you know, 300, fantastic movie. But I feel like you are a director, you know, pretty up there in your game. I imagine you've got a lot of flexibility with studios that you work with. Like, you know, every movie can't be your director's cut. Do you know what I mean? Like, you've got to start putting out some good work, Zach. Come on.
Correct. That's the only things I have, Dan. So I will move us straight into the mailbag. Now, despite being tagged into our posts across multiple social media platforms, Michael Keaton did not reply, like, or retweet any of our posts about Batman 3, aka The Flash. So that was disappointing. But someone else called Michael did respond to our review of Batman 3, aka The Flash, saying that he really wanted Flash to get stuck in the Keaton universe so that he, the Batman, and Batman and Supergirl could have had more adventures together in more movies. Now, that would never have happened, of course, because of the reset going on, but I like the thinking that would set up some pretty tasty sequels, and I would have been there for that. But my counter thought is, it's kind of the same as our corridor around Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny. And what if India got stuck in the past with, you know, was it Archimedes? And, you know, that's fun, but what does that mean for the prime universe that he leaves behind? So, but I do like the idea of more Keatonverse, at least.
It's tough, isn't it? Because I think, I can't imagine Keaton even wants to do more Batman. Do you know what I mean? Like,
no.
You know, like, this was probably like a once and a big favour, and there was probably a big paycheck that comes with it. Like, to continue rocking the old school cow, I don't know. It's a tough ask.
Talking of Roadhouse, Dan, Christina liked your review of Roadhouse, but thinks that you, like many other people, she says, may have gone into the movie thinking it was perhaps a little more serious than it actually is. And she says, it's a silly movie, and if you go in expecting that, you actually can probably appreciate it more for what it is, but otherwise enjoyed your review of Roadhouse, Dan.
Roadhouse.
Ian from Miami, who's not currently in Miami, but still gets called that anyway, he has a recommendation for us, Dan, and that is the TV series The Gentlemen. He knows that we like the movie because we did that review of that, and he reckons that we will absolutely love this series as well. Good leads, he says, good, decent support, quality Guy Ritchie all round. And of course, Dan, this actually is on our radar for a watch of the week. And so I'm thinking we must lock this in, as, you know, because this series is getting a bit of media hype now. And so I think we need to really wade in there.
I completely agree. I actually feel like there's quite a few shows, and sometimes this kind of spills out into our Discord channel. Like, we've got a long list of shows that we want to watch. So if there's something good that you do think we should be watching, make sure you get in touch. But we are getting to them. I think it's actually going to make for some great top TV shows of the year conversation.
So what I'd recommend this week, Champions League. There's been some tasty games in the quarterfinals of the Champions League, but it's a bit late for recommending that. Peak performance then last week was Rami Malek. We had a few responses. Astrid said, can I say all of them? Yes, you can. You can indeed. Harriet went with honorable mentions of The Pacific and Night at the Museum. Peak performance was Bohemian Rhapsody. Phil went with Mr. Robot. Phil also has a Walking Dead comment. I just remembered, Dan, and I forgot to mention earlier, so I'll come back to that in a minute. Samara went with the honorable mention of No Time to Die and the peak performance, Mr. Robot. And Paddy gave the 3-2-1 of Night at the Museum 3, The Pacific. And his peak performance was also Bohemian Rhapsody. Dan, I saw a facial expression that listeners wouldn't have picked up on. I wonder if you want to elaborate on that.
I am going to challenge the Patreon producers' viewing of Mr. Robot to bring that into account. This must be a surface level watch, not a full full season review.
I feel like there's more challenge to be said there.
I'm going to get Roadhouse. That's for sure. That's what's going to happen.
That's what's going to happen to you. Yeah. We'll see if there's a pod next week. I just want to go back before I do forget at the same time. So Phil gave us that peak performance. He described himself as a recent listener, and he added to his peak performance comment, appreciated the deep dive into The Walking Dead, as not many people are doing this now with The Walking Dead like they used to with the old series. I enjoyed The Ones Who Live, and I personally think they will end season two of Daryl Dixon with him returning to the US to meet up with Rick, Michonne and Maggie for some sort of special. I see they are now making season two of Dead City as well right now. Cheers, Phil. Interesting.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if they get the whole gang back together. It's just going to be, I don't know, Paul. God, is it going to, like, should they get the gang back together? Oh my God, I've got PTSD even thinking about like
you've got pre PTSD.
Even just thinking about the logistics of whether they A can pull it off, B whether it makes sense story wise, and then C is it actually like it's a bit like talking about the Game of Thrones before, like it would kind of be taking us back to that OG Walking Dead experience, and I just don't know, like. Just leave Rick and Michonne. Like, I know we're not going to be able to, but just leave them be. Just let them live happily ever after in my memories, you know, as opposed to, like, where can they go from there?
Just leave Woody and Buzz in the toy cupboard and we can all go home happy. It's never going to happen because the ratings have been too good on The Ones Who Live, which is a good thing. But that is our mailbag this week, Dan. Without further ado, I will announce we're going into our peak performance segment.
We are indeed. So much like our Watch of the Week, Paul and I take turns choosing different actors, actresses, directors, producers, etc. And we call out what we think are their peak performances. And of course, if you have a peak performance for our chosen person, then make sure you write in and let us know. This week, Paul, you have brought Bill Murray to the table.
Yeah, and it's funny. I've been getting a lot of Bill Murray content coming up on my sort of you know, Instagram feed and suggestions because of, I think because of the Ghostbusters Frozen Empire, but the peak performances for me, the honorable mention I'm going with is actually, this won't be a popular one. This is as Wallace Ritchie in 1997's The Man Who Knew Too Little. And this is not a memorable movie for many people. A big part of this for me though, is the fact that this movie sort of pays homage to two Alfred Hitchcock films. Firstly, The Man Who Knew Too Much, which is, you know, obviously what the title was based on with a switch on that. And then the actual story itself is very, very much resembles the plot of North by Northwest, which is an absolutely killer Hitchcock movie. It really is. It's interesting. It could kind of consider be the almost the American version of Mr. Bean in some ways too, this movie, just without the main character having a really strange voice. But it's just a great Bill Murray performance. He's got that dry sense of humor that when he's playing someone who's just not that bright, just goes hand in hand together so well. And I'm a big Hitchcock fan, so I love this movie, The Man Who Knew Too Much, The Man Who Knew Too Little. The peak performance I'm going with is going to be a splitter as well. It's kind of the Vegemite of the, you know, the cream egg. You either love it or you hate it. There's not much in between. That is 1993's Groundhog Day, and clearly I love it. And I will never not laugh at this movie in some of the classic scenes. I think it's the closest comedy equivalent I have to you with your sort of stepbrothers. I love the stupidity of it all and the fun. I would love to be in his situation, you know, as long as I could eventually come out of it. The idea of being able to just say what you want to your neighbor and then the next day you wake up and they've forgotten all about it, and then in the meantime you can just do whatever you want, learn the piano, read history. I just found this movie brilliant, and many things have tried to do things similarly, and often we reference, oh, it's a bit of a Groundhog Day, but this is the classic. So those are mine, my picks. Dan, against all rules, I'm also allowing myself an additional shout out for a 10-second scene in Kingpin where Bill Murray is 10-pin bowling and he hits a strike, and his celebration walk back to his seat is one of the times I lost lost it laughing in the cinema. So I'm a 10-second mention for that scene in Kingpin. But what about you?
Very good, very good. I actually also have Groundhog Day, but it is for my honourable mention, basically for all the reasons you've said. I think this movie's just so iconic. I feel like ever since this movie, we've all lived the Groundhog Day experience. We've all had the fantasies, like you've sort of said. So definitely a classic. When I think Bill Murray, I think Groundhog Day. But for my peak performance, I'm going to go with 1998's Rushmore, which is a great Wes Anderson film where Bill Murray plays a character called Herman Bloom, and he's basically he's got two kids who are kind of disrespectful, and he kind of finds this a glimmer of hope in this other character called Max Fisher, who's a student at Rushmore. And just like, it's this classic Bill Murray, sort of takes him under his wing. It's got the Wes Anderson kind of charm and dry humour to it, and it's just such a wonderful Bill Murray experience. So for me, Groundhog Day and Rushmore.
Great picks, great picks. A lot of 90s picks in there for us. Four out of four.
Interesting.
Not bad at all.
Interesting, no Ghostbusters for either, so I expect a lot of mailbag write-ins.
Yeah, I mean, that's great. For me, I came in thinking, oh, I'm bound to have Groundhog Day. Is it going to be Ghostbusters? But in the end, no, it wasn't.
Indeed. Well, Paul, I guess that brings us to the end of another episode of the Half Measures podcast.
Does indeed. Thanks as always for listening in. If you have any suggestions about what we should be watching, please tell us, halfmeasurespodcast.com.
Also, a very special shout out to our Patreon producers, Samara Wanning-King, Diana Kanawa, Trisha Brady, Tony Baby Horsefall, and Michael Chalmers. If you too would like to become a Patreon producer, then you can find those details in the show notes below. I also have a special poll for you going if you are listening via Spotify, so go ahead and check that out. But until next week, everyone, adios.